Between them, they rolled the carcass on its back. But when Owar prepared to make the first cut with his flint knife, Santan opened the blade of her clasp knife and handed it to him. Owar hesitated. He had never touched that beautiful weapon. He believed that if he did, it might cleave to his fingers, and he would never be able to give it up again. "Take, Owar," Santan urged him. And when he still hesitated, staring at the knife with a timid reverence, Santan, with a sudden intuitive flash, realized the true reason for Owar's antagonism towards her. "He wants the knife. He is lusting after it." She almost laughed, but controlled it. "Take, Owar," and the little man reached out slowly and took it from her hand. He turned it lovingly between his fingers. He stroked the steel, caressing the blade, and then tested the edge with his thumb. "Aye, aye," he exclaimed as the steel sliced through his skin and raised a beaded chain of blood drops across the ball of his thumb. "What a weapon! Look, honey!" He displayed his injured thumb proudly. "See how sharp it is." "My stupid husband, it is usual to cut the game and not the hunter." Owar cackled happily at the joke and bent to the task. He took the bull's scrotum in his left hand and drew it out, then with a single stroke lopped it free. "Aye, how sharp!" He laid the scrotum aside. The testicles grilled on the coals were a delicacy, and the sack of soft skin would make a fine pouch for arrowheads and other small valuables. Starting from the wound between the bull's hind legs, he made a shallow cut through the skin, angling the blade forward so as not to pierce the belly cavity. He led the cut with his forefinger hooked under the skin, up between the bull's forelegs, under its throat to the point of the chin. He made ring cuts around the bull's neck and around the hocks of all four limbs, then sliced down the inside of the legs until he intercepted the first long lateral incision. With the women pulling on the flaps of free skin, and Owar pushing his bald fist down between the white underside of the skin and the blue marbled muscles sheathed in their transparent capsules, they flayed the hide of the carcass in a single sheet. It made a soft, tearing, crackling sound as it came away. They spread it out, first side down on the ground. Then Owar opened the stomach cavity with the precision of a surgeon, lifted out the heavy, wet viscera, and laid them on the sheet of skin. Hani scurried away and collected a bunch of the fine, pale desert grass. She had to range widely, for the clumps of grass were scattered and sparse. She hurried back and arranged the grass over the gourd bowl, while Owar slit open the slippery white bag of the bull's rumen and lifted out a double handful of the contents. Water dribbled from the undigested vegetation even before Owar began to squeeze it out. Using the bunch of grass as a sieve, Owar filled the gourd with fluid and then lifted it with both hands to his lips. He drank deeply, closing his eyes with ecstasy. And when he lowered the bowl, he belched thunderously and grinned hugely as he passed the gourd to Hani. She drank noisily and finished with a belch and a hoot of appreciation, wiping her mouth on the back of her hand as she passed the gourd to Santan. Santan examined the pale, greenish-brown liquid. "It's only vegetable juice," she consoled herself. "It hasn't even been chewed or mixed with the gastric juices yet." And she lifted the gourd. It was much easier than she had anticipated, and it tasted like a broth of herbs and grass, with the bitter aftertaste of the bai tuber. She handed the empty gourd back to Owar, and while he squeezed and strained the rest of the contents of the rumen, she imagined the long table at Mont Homme, set with silver and crystal and Sèvres porcelain, and the way Anna fussed over the flowers, the freshness of the turbot, the temperature of the wine, and the exact shade of pink of the slices of freshly carved filet. And she laughed aloud. She had come a long, long way from Mont Homme. The two little San laughed with her in complete misunderstanding, and they all drank again and then again.
"Look at the child," Hane invited her husband. "In the land of the singing sand, I feared for her, but already she blooms like the desert flowers after the rain. She is a strong one, with the liver of a lion. Did you see how she helped at the moment of the kill by drawing the eye of the bull to herself?"
Hane nodded and cackled and belched. "She will breed a fine son. You hear the word of old Hane, a fine son indeed."
Owa, his belly ballooning with good water, grinned and was about to concede when his eye dropped to the knife that lay between his feet and the grin faded.
"Silly old woman, you chatter like the brainless spotted guinea fowl while the meat spoils."
He snatched up the knife. Envy was an emotion so alien to his nature that Owa was deeply unhappy and not really certain of the reason why, but the thought of handing the knife back to the girl filled him with a corrosive anger that he had never known before. He frowned and muttered as he dressed out the viscera of the bull, cutting thin slices of the rubbery white tripes and chewing them raw as he worked. It was mid-morning before they had festooned the branches of one of the dead trees with long ribbons of bright scarlet gemsbok meat, and the heat built up so swiftly that the meat darkened and dried out almost immediately. It was too hot to eat. Between them, Hane and Santen spread the wet gemsbok skin over a framework of dead branches, and they huddled under this tent-like structure, taking refuge from the sun, cooling their bodies with the evaporating fluids of the gemsbok's secondary stomach. At sundown, Owa took out his fire sticks and began the laborious process of coaxing a spark from them. But impatiently, Santan took the ball of dry kindling from him. Up to that time, she had always been too intimidated by the little San and her own feeling of total inadequacy to make any show of initiative. Now, somehow, the crossing of the dunes and her part in the gemsbok hunt emboldened her, and she laid out the kindling and the knife and flint with the San looking on curiously. She struck a shower of sparks into the kindling and stooped quickly to blow it into flame. The San shrieked in amazement and consternation and backed away in superstitious awe. Only once the fire was burning steadily could Santan reassure them, and they crept back and marvelled over the steel and the flint. Under Santan's tutelage, Owa at last succeeded in striking sparks, and his joy was spontaneous and childlike. As soon as the night brought relief from the heat of the sun, they prepared a feast of broiled liver and tripes and kidneys, wrapped in the lacework of white fat that had enclosed the intestines. While the women worked at the fire, Owa danced for the spirit of the gemsbok, and, as he had promised, he leaped as high as he had done when he was a young man, and he sang until his voice cracked and failed. Then he squatted down at the fire and began to eat. The two San ate with the fat greasing their chins and running onto their chests. They ate until their stomachs were distended and bulged out like balloons, hanging down on their laps. They went on eating long after Santan was gorged and satiated. Every once in a while Santan was sure they were faltering, as their jaws slowed and they blinked at each other like sleepy owls in the firelight. Then Owa would place both hands on his bulging stomach and roll onto one buttock, his wrinkled face contorted, and he would grunt and strain until he was able to clap off a resounding fart. Across the fire, Hane would answer him with a squealing blast, every bit as ear-splitting, and they both hooted with laughter and crammed more meat into their mouths. As Santan drifted off into sleep with her own stomach stuffed with meat, she realized that this orgy was a natural reaction of a people accustomed to privation, faced suddenly with a mountain of food and no means of preserving it. When she woke at dawn, they were still feasting. With the sun, the two San lay under the tent of gemsbok hide, their bellies distended, and snored through the heat. But at sunset, they blew up the fire and began feasting again. By this time, what remained of the gemsbok
was smelling high and strong, but this seemed, if anything, to stimulate their appetite. When Owar rose to stagger out of the firelight on private business, Santan saw that his buttocks, which had been slack and sagging and wrinkled when they came down from the dunes, were now tight and round and polished.
"Just like a camel's hump,"
Santan giggled, and Hani giggled with her and offered her a slice of the belly fat, cooked brown and crisp. Once again they slept through the day like a nest of pythons, digesting the gargantuan banquet, but at sunset, with the carrying bags packed with the hard black strips of dried chemsbok meat, Owa led them eastwards, across the moonlit plain. He carried the folded chemsbok skin balanced on his head.